Well, we have 9 more holes to go, so how about you two fellas follow me to the 10th tee?
On to the back 9, hour number 2 of Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper, son of Hall of Famer Billy Casper.
2 players down the middle on the 10th hole.
Here's Brian and Bob.
Well, thank you very much, and welcome into the back 9, hour number 2 of Real Golf Radio. Brian Taylor with you. Bob Casper is out this week. America's favorite caddy has been sitting in. We've had a really fun first hour talking about Nelly Korda, talking about Scottie Scheffler, and we even dropped a little Frankie in there who went 58 on the Korn Ferry Tour. That's pretty good stuff. So we had some good times in hour number 1. Given the fact that Bob's out of town, we are going to drop some of the best of from the last couple of weeks here on the back 9, hour number 2. Most recently, we had a chance to catch up with Jeff Babineau, recapping the Masters and talking about Scottie's win. Jeff Rude on kind of the state of the game today in the pro golf and the challenges that they have. And then Troy Merritt, we caught up with him from the Honda a few weeks ago. And he shared some great stuff about distances on the PGA Tour and how players know their iron distances and some things. It's kind of a fun conversation with Troy. So that's all coming up here on the back 9. If you want more on our thoughts on Nelly and Scottie, check it out. At Real Golf is our Twitter handle, or download Real Golf Radio wherever your favorite podcast is found, and catch up on hour number 1 of the show. But the caddy is standing by with us still. I think he's on his way to get a little bit of lunch. But Caddy, I just wanted to throw this at you. Nelly Korda, this is a Justin Ray gem. Nelly Korda in stroke play during her 5 tournament win streak, she's gaining 3.6 strokes per round. 3.6 per round. I mean, that's like, what, 14 shots a week. 76% of greens in regulation. She's 46 under on the par fives, and her scoring average is 68.7. That's unreal stuff.
Yeah, so this is the caddy parking again on if your analytics program is based on tour averages and you want to be average, Nelly's going to kick your butt every week. So you better change that up a little bit. So speaking of the back 9, I was standing in front of the clubhouse at Hoy Lake. Remember the year when it was real dry?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Tiger played the first 2 rounds with Baldo and he was hitting irons off. Yeah. So I'm standing there, and it's a hot afternoon. It's like Tuesday or Wednesday, and Seve's walking by, and he sees me, so he bolts right over, and he wags his finger. He's always wagging his finger when he's about to give you some wisdom. And he's wagging his finger, and he says, "You know, when I was a young man, I would come to the 18th hole, and I would cry because it's last hole to play. Now I am an old man, and when I come to the 9th hole, I cry. Because they make me play 9 more holes." Yeah. One of my favorite Seve lines ever.
Oh, that's a beaut. And with that, we will leave you. That is America's favorite caddy joining us here for the Open. We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get into it. Troy Merritt, Jeff Rude, Jeff Babineau. Stay tuned. A little best of hour number 2 right here on Real Golf Radio.
And now, the best.
Rewind.
Of Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper on the Real Golf Radio Network.
Yeah, you forget about how young and how far all the kids hit it out here. I don't feel young at all.
No?
No, they all got ball speeds 190 and club head speeds 125 and hit it 30 past me, and yeah, 38's old out here.
Hey, but that's you know what, though? You've obviously been doing something right, because you're still there at 38, which is saying something.
I just bribed the right people.
Okay.
There you go. So tell us about the golf course this week. You said you don't play it much, but tell us about that that one there at PGA National.
Yeah, it's one I typically take off. Not that I don't like it at all, but I like to play the 6 on the West Coast, and it was always the one right after that, so it was always a good reason to go back home, but this year, that's not the case. It's a really good challenge, and the rough is down a little bit this year, and they changed number 10 from a 4 to a 5. The stroke average is the same, but, you know, one shot better on the leaderboard is nice. You know, the cut's always even or over par around here, but looking like it's going to be 2 under this week, and it was quite windy this morning. We hit some shots that you just kind of hit, and you hope that it finds land at some point. And this one you can't take any shots off. It's fun watching the boys battle from the comfort of my hotel room. I just wish the breeze was blowing as hard now as it was all morning.
So you're sitting there currently, kind of right on the cut line there at 2 under. You feeling pretty good about that one making it in?
Yeah, feeling pretty good. Feeling a lot better now than when I finished. It was a tough finish. I hit an 8-iron just like I wanted from 138. That flew about 132 and came up short on 17. Didn't get it up and down, and then played 18 smart. Hit a nice tee shot down the middle. Laid up with a beautiful 8-iron. Chipped a pin wedge from 117 right at the flag that went 105 into the bunker, and then made another bogey. And yeah, walked off thinking, oh boy, I hope I didn't just blow one there after hitting shots like I wanted and making bogeys. But it's playing tough enough that it looks like 200 is going to be okay.
Yeah, I'm looking at that 18th hole, and it does look like you played it pretty good. I mean, nice spot off the tee, nice safe right side of the fairway, and then leaving yourself on your second shot there with a good angle in. What happens on those shots? You said you hit it 117, came 105. What was it? Wind? What was it? Just miss? What happens there?
No, yeah, the wind whipping in at about 2:30, 2 o'clock. So 117, I'm chipping a pitching wedge that I normally hit about 142, 143, playing about a 130, 132 shot, coming down right on it, and it goes 105. Just got hammered by the wind. It was probably blowing a good 20, 25 at that time, gusting maybe a hair higher when we came through the bear trap. And yeah, the wind just got me on 17 and 18. And I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
So the course, like you said, the rough is down a little bit. Is the course a little, is it dry as far as the greens and those complexes are concerned, or is there still a lot of moisture in the greens to be able to hold shots?
These ones, I always find it hard to get them to hold on the Bermuda. I choose it just because they're so slick and they're so fast, and then they get so crusty that usually it's kind of a splat and release kind of golf course. This morning it was even like that this morning. Nothing real soft, stopping real quick unless you're going into the wind, and you can't play every hole into the wind. But, it's just you really have to control your ball the best you can out here. Hit as many fairways as greens as you can, and just hold on to your hat when the wind is blowing really hard.
Yeah, and back to that 18th. I mean, you're hitting that shot into the wind, but if the wind doesn't hit it, knowing you've got more club than normally, you know, there's a little water on the other side of that one, right? From that angle.
Yeah, water right on the other side. And when you have enough club to hit the scoreboard out in the middle of the lake, it really makes you think about what you're doing, and you're taking so much off of a club, and you're just at the mercy of any kind of wind gust that comes across, and then I just caught one at the wrong time.
So you'd rather catch the gust and come up short in the bunker than have it not hit it and watch it sail out into the lake, and everyone's looking at you like, what are you doing, huh?
I'd rather the ball fly at the flag end up right next to the flag every time.
There you go. See? I like that.
I gave him a would you rather. I gave him two scenarios. He went with the one that you got to think about. Okay, I'm down with that.
Yeah. The one that he was planning for.
Yeah. Hey, I want to ask you a strategic question, Troy. You mentioned your wedges and how far you can hit it and that kind of thing. The internet was making a big deal about how Scotty, I think TaylorMade maybe had put an ad out or something. And basically Scotty was calling his distances before he even hit him, and they went through the bag and he was pretty much right on with all of them. Is that as kind of unique as what it looks like for most of us amateurs that he's dialed in on those numbers, or is that pretty standard for tour pros? That's the first part. And then the second part is how often are you trying to hit your full shot distance, especially with your scoring clubs like your wedges, or are you dialing those back? Do you typically go 3/4 or back it off with wedges into greens and things like that?
Well, part one of your 7-minute question, last week, good example, even though Tylus sent me 2 emails to make sure that I bring golf balls to Mexico, I left my golf balls in Boise. So all I had available were the 2023 Pro Vs, and I play the 19. So it was a brand new golf ball for me. So I did just a little bit of number testing to make sure that it was going as far as I wanted. I hit an 8-iron on the driving range that day. It was into the wind. Normally hit my 8-iron 172 into the wind, The Titleist rep asked me how far that one went. I said it probably went 155, and it went 155. He said, normally how far would it go? I'd say 172. He said it went 172.2, I think he said. And then he said, well, hit a six iron. So I hit a six iron into the wind. He said, how far did that go? I said, it looked like it went about 175. He said, yep, went 175. He said, how far does it usually go? I said, it usually goes 192, 193. He said, yep, it would have gone 192.6. So the tour guys have their numbers dialed down pretty much to the yardage through the bag. Doesn't matter what it is. And like I said, this week, especially when control is such a premium, rarely are you hitting a shot 100% with an iron. You're trying to control it as much as possible. And, you know, typically when you're playing into the wind, right to left wind or left to right wind, especially any kind of hurt, you might take one extra club and really control that flight. And you're not obviously hitting it then 100%. You know, you might be chipping shots at 75, 80% just to make sure you control the trajectory and the distance.
And so our listeners understand, when you're talking about numbers like that, you're talking about carry distance, not carry and roll distance, correct?
Always carry distance. You always want to know how far the ball flies. And then, you know, based on, you know, conditions, you know, green conditions, wind conditions, if you're playing from the fairway or the rough, then you can try to figure out how far that ball is going to release, whether it's forwards or backwards. But you always want to know how far the ball will carry, and you want your land numbers to be spot on.
Hey, Troy, we appreciate you taking some time. So you're playing this week. What's on tap for you the next few weeks on your schedule?
Just going to continue to let it roll. I got Puerto Rico next week, and then I'll play in the Players in 2 weeks. And then I've got Valspar over in Tampa. I'm going to take Houston off and then play the Valero in San Antonio, not in the Masters currently. And then we've got four in a row right after the Masters. Initially, I was going to play all 11 out of those 12 weeks, but my oldest son reminded me that I'll be gone for a long time. I'll miss all of football season and spring break. So I'm going home for spring break and watching some football and not going to go to Houston.
I like it.
There you go.
Good job being a dad. Troy, thanks, man. We appreciate it. Wishing you the best of luck this weekend, and we'll catch up to you again real soon.
All right, guys. I appreciate it. Go Hawks.
There you go. All right. I like that. We didn't even talk about Caitlin either. So if we had some more time, we probably would have done that. Two-time winner Troy Merritt joining us here on Real Golf Radio.
It's the best of Real Golf Radio. You're listening to the best of Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper on the Real Golf Radio Network.
I'm just curious what your thoughts are in the current state of professional golf.
Well, I have a lot of thoughts. One, the umbrella thought I have is, you know, I've been around the tour for a half century, having caddied out there in 1974 as a summer job. My interest in professional golf has never been lower than it is right now. I'm about as big of a tour junkie as you could find. I mean, you know, I covered it for over 30 years, went to, you know, over 100 majors. I watch every minute of every major. And, the whole thing has kind of turned me off. Okay. I'm not a big fan of. Now, Taylor Gooch probably should have gotten in the Masters last year, right? Wasn't that the controversy?
Yeah.
He was good enough to get in. He didn't get in. You know, I think, you know, I mean, to say that he would, Rory would have an asterisk on the Grand Slam if he won without, no, that's just silly. It's silly. But the point that he does make that I think, and I've said this before, I think maybe in your show, I think it's really important that the majors get real. They need to get real. They need to invite. They need to give more sponsors exemptions because of this loophole with LIV. Okay, you know, Dustin Johnson. Well, you know, I mean, he won an Open and a Masters, so he's always going to go to the Masters. And you know, there's a fair amount of Masters champions in LIV that will always go. But the majors need to give the top players exemptions, regardless of what tour they're playing.
And I guess the Masters,
so they need to adjust.
Yeah. And the Masters did that, right, with an invitation. Joaquin Niemann, for instance,
yeah,
earned that
did.
Spot.
They did,
right?
Yeah. I applaud Fred Ridley for doing it. Yeah.
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 Yeah, so he won that event and played really well over a period of time, and winning on the Asian or the Australasian tour, and because of that, he merited that exemption. But it's kind of interesting that, you know, a league, LIV Golf, decides to make a breakaway and promise their guys that they're going to get world golf ranking points, and now they're not getting world golf ranking points, and they expect the PGA Tour and the world of golf and professional golf to move to them and them not move to what they need to do to get the world ranking points and being on all the majors.
Was that promise put in on paper?
It's been commented by two or three players now that are playing with the LIV Golf League and said that that's what they were promised from the beginning.
But whether that was contractual or not, Jeff, I don't know. I haven't read that.
Yeah, well, if it's contractual, it's breach of contract.
Right.
So, you know.
My guess is it was Norman making some promises.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if they went to 72 holes, would they get world ranking points?
Be closer. That's one of the boxes that they want them to check.
Right.
Yeah, and have more opportunities come in and out of the league or people to qualify for the league.
Right. Yeah. You know, the other thing about LIV golf, and again, you know, I don't object to guys taking money. I mean, where else is Pat Perez going to get $10 million? Or somebody told me that Perez last year averaged 74 and made $7 million. I mean, that's just cuckoo money. There's no business model for it. It's just, you know, the Saudis with the bottomless pit of oil money willing to pay that. And it's, you know, I mean, we've never seen anything like that. But, you know, I don't, you know, John Rahm obviously was the big one, Cam Smith before that, and Koepka, although Koepka, you know, was in a slump when he signed. You know, he had backslid a little bit before rising back up. But it's one thing to take the money. It's another thing you got to play with nobody watching, you know? I mean, where would you rather play in big events where there are people watching and cheering and where you're feeling the love, where you're connecting with people? I mean, just because they go to LIV doesn't mean that people have to watch it. I mean, I've watched part of one tournament. It doesn't appeal to me. And this business about growing the game, you know, that whole thing that, you know, in the first year or two, I mean, just, again, let's get real. I mean, you know, put down the crack pipe. You're not growing the game. There's only one thing a touring pro can do to grow the game. There's only one thing professional golf can do to grow the game. Only one thing. And that's to get the top players to play against each other more often. Okay.
Yeah.
And now the top players are playing against each other four times a year. Okay. All of the top players. When you throw in the top players from LIV with, you know, the top players in the PGA Tour. So, no, it's fractured. It's the game is fractured. And so this grow the game thing, you know, give me a break. Go sell crazy somewhere else.
I love it.
Your thoughts about Anthony Kim jumping back in and deciding that he's going to play, and he's playing in his first event on LIV Golf as well.
Yeah, I don't really have any thoughts. I knew AK back, you know, when he was in his prime. I enjoyed being around him. I thought he was interesting. You know, I remember doing a story on him in around 2006. It was right before the Super Bowl in 2006. He used to stay up all night, you know, talking with friends and stuff. I enjoyed his company. He was a different guy. But has he been relevant in 16 years since the 2008 Ryder Cup? I don't know that he has. So, you know, listen, you know, when you, the major champions, the ships, the majors turn me on. Okay. So the Capital One hit me giggle, you know, the lesser events, don't really appeal to me. And so Anthony Kim playing an LIV event doesn't, you know, good for him, good for him. But that doesn't mean I have to watch.
Jeff Rude joining us here on Real Golf Radio. That's interesting. You mentioned the Capital One. I'm assuming you're talking about the match with the LPGA players and the PGA Tour players that play. They came out and said it was the lowest rated that they've ever had in that, ninth edition. And I can't say that I watched the entire thing. I like the premise of it. I even like more so that getting the ladies and the guys together. I think the more we do that, the better. You talk about growing the game. That to me, that might be a little bit of an effort there. Right. So I was bummed out to see that it had lesser ratings than some of the other ones. But I just curiously, that one wasn't something that just jumped out, and that wasn't must watch for you. You don't necessarily need to see the players out there just screwing around, having fun. You're more about, you know, high level, you know, competition is what I'm hearing from you.
Real competition that makes guys nervous, that makes guys sweat, that makes guys not sleep at night, you know, that makes guys yell at their caddy on the range before a Sunday of a major championship final round. I mean, you know what? Yeah. I mean, stuff that matters. I mean, you know, what does the final round of the LIV mean other than, you know, $4 million? I mean, it doesn't. But, here's how out of it I am. I didn't even know the Capital One thing was going on the other night until I got a text from somebody saying, are you watching this? Or made a reference to it. And had I known about it, I actually might have turned it on simply to watch Rose Zhang play golf.
Right.
Out of curiosity.
See, and I think that was actually something, for whatever reason, they didn't promote it like they have in years past. That's the comments that I'm hearing more often than anything else is that we didn't know about it. There was no promotion. So that's unfortunate for whatever reason. Yeah. Hey, before we let you go, Jeff, and we don't, you know, we've got a lot coming up. Obviously the Players is not far away, but the Masters is on the horizon. Right. I know for you, that was a special one, as it is for Bob and me as well. What do you, when you think about the Masters, what is it about the Masters in your mind that just makes it such a great event?
Oh, wow. A whole bunch of reasons. It's history. It's the feel that you get there. It just feels important. It's the toughest ticket in sports. I mean, throw that in the crock pot. The golf course, the fact that, you know, the players care so much about it. I mean, that creates the value of a golf tournament is how much do the players care about it. And so, you know, to me, and the Masters is, what was the old line? I can't remember who wrote it, you know, decades ago. The Masters is fun and the U.S. Open is work. It's the whole back nine feeder, those golf holes. So there's a whole bunch of different reasons.
I assume you'll be tuned in watching that.
Well, every minute of it, minute of it. And I want to buy two tickets because my girlfriend wants to go. She's never been. So I'm trying to figure out a way to buy two tickets. If you guys have any ideas, direct message me, I've never been there as a patron on a Sunday, which would kind of be a cool thing to go out there on a Sunday. But the other thing about the Masters is why it's so good is we used to have to wait 8 months to get to it from the August PGA Championship to April. Now we have to wait 9 months from the British Open in July to April. So that's another reason. I mean, we missed the majors now for 9 months. So throw that in the crock pot.
I love it. You got the juices going, man, as you always do. Thanks so much for taking some time. It's always, like I said, it's just always good to hear your voice, and we appreciate the, you know, we're 25 years of doing Real Golf Radio this year, and you certainly were one of the guys that was instrumental in helping us out along the way, so we appreciate that, and it's great to have you on. Hopefully we'll be able to do it again.
Well, I'd love to do it, and again, as I said before, you guys have an open invitation. Come down here to Orlando and play golf with me. I've got a guest room with your name on it.
Oh, I like
you
that.
You got it.
I like
Sounds
that.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. That'd I got to move great. Up a tee right, with guys. You. I'm going to be a senior golfer, so I'm coming up there.
All right.
So.
All right. Enjoy. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks. There you go. Jeff Rue joining us right here on Real Golf Radio.
It's the best of Real Golf Radio. You're listening to the best of Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper on the Real Golf Radio Network.
So we've talked about a few things today, and I find it interesting when you look at the ratings were down and Scottie Scheffler sort of walked in the park coming down the stretch, if you will, that there's some people that are disappointed in that. I think there's obviously excitement when it's back and forth down the stretch they come, but I think it's pretty rare where you see a number one player in the world that's expected to win that actually goes on to win and performs in just exactly how everybody expects him to, and just to sprinkles greatness all on us and we get to witness it. To me that's actually really special. Maybe it lacks a little drama down the last couple of holes, but I thought it was super cool. I was just curious what your thoughts were on how this one all worked finished out.
Yeah, I mean, you have to go back to 2005 when you had a pre-tournament favorite who actually won. So it's not easy to do. And that, you know, that was Tiger. You look at Scheffler now, twice has been number one and won a green jacket. The only other guy to do that twice was Tiger. So, you know, you're throwing Scottie Scheffler in a lot of sentences with Tiger Woods these days. But I'm with you. I mean, I was kind of buckling up for this wild, close finish. With all these guys, you know, firing, and, you know, the second nine on Sunday at Augusta when we see the eagles and birdies and all that stuff. And, I mean, you had three big mistakes from these guys. I mean, four if you got an extra double from Morikawa, and Scheffler doing all the right things, and all of a sudden you had this runaway. So it just, I think the ending was a little shocking to the system, because I think you expect, or I did at least, I expected to see this really go down to the wire and look so good with 10 holes left. And we had a kind of a walk away.
You know, what's kind of interesting also is that, you know, it was a walk away, but it was close for a lot of the front nine, especially after the ninth hole. And then Scottie Scheffler made what, three or four birdies on the back nine and shot three under par. I was every time he went for the green on 13 and 15, I was like sitting at the front of my seat. My stomach was churning. I was nervous for him and everything. And he just went about it like normal business.
Yeah. I mean, they had a decision to make on 13, right? It would have been odd to see him lay up with them. They had a little 200 and change to the front. And Ted Scott told him, you know, hey man, yeah, we're going for it. Do what you do. I mean, that's what he does. You're the best ball striker in the world. So, and they did what they did. He makes the birdie there, 14, he makes birdie. And you know, then he's just pulling away at that point. We're figuring out who might win second. But as close as that was, you know, you had four guys tied on the first nine. Four guys tied for lead on Sunday, which is really exciting. And in the end, you have when Aberg finishes four back, and the rest of the guys are at least seven back. So it's just kind of amazing how Scotty's one of those guys that has that gear and just slowly can pull away. And he just does all the right things. I kind of roll my eyes when I hear people call him boring. I mean, if you're bored watching him play golf, you're kind of bored with greatness, because he really does it in a special way. He doesn't make the mistakes. He's such a high golf IQ. And when he gets the putter going, he's proven right now he's pretty unbeatable right now.
So Jeff, to your point, what you're saying there is this is a guy that's racked up nine wins. a pair of Masters, a pair of Players, a pair of APIs, pair in Phoenix. I mean, he's racked up all these wins, and he's racking them up at certain places. And that sure sounds a lot like a guy that won 82 times recently in Tiger Woods, sort of had his places, and he dominated and did what he needed to do. He's like he's unlocked this code, and he's won early. And all this has been in the last, what, 3.5 years, which is just it's crazy. Yeah,
started 22, right? So less than that. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. The one stat that kind of hit me coming out is I think they threw out a stat that Scotty hasn't won after the Masters.
Right.
So if you think about it, like the year he won in 22, the Masters was his fourth win. This time it was his third win. So his seasons have kind of been, you know, front load of wins in Phoenix, stuff like that. So that's kind of interesting. So you want to see him. Certainly he played well enough on the back end of last year to win a few times, and just, you know, he had some poor putting weeks or kind of off putting weeks. So, you know, he does so many things great. I think his putting really stands out when he's not knocking down all these 12 footers, but he's looking at them all day. So he's not going to knock them all down. And certainly he made big putts, right? He made the big putt at 8. That was huge. He didn't have to putt at 9. He almost holds it for 2. And then he makes a big putt at 10. So he's making, you know, he had a big putt at 13 a day earlier when he's kind of spinning his wheels a little bit early on that second nine. So he makes, if he doesn't make all the, you know, 6 footers he's looking at, he makes a lot of big, pivotal, momentum-keeping putts. And that's the sign of a really good player.
So, you know, he's gonna be going through some changes here pretty soon with his family, with his wife having a baby, that kind of thing. How do you think that's going to affect him? Good or bad, as far as his game's concerned?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, I'm really impressed with Scheffler and how, I think the word Rory used talking about him was uncluttered. And I really think he keeps it simple. You look at the guys who finished first and second last week, and they're two of the guys who keep the game as simple as you possibly could keep it, right? I mean, Scotty's seen the same swing guy since he was 7 years old. Randy Smith. He's not messing around with swings and this and that. And it was a big deal for them to welcome Phil Kenyon onto the team to help with the putting. That was a big move because it was always just Scotty and Randy. And Aber reminds me of the same. I mean, he's just such a refreshingly simple guy. They don't get in their own way. And then you've got a guy like Rory who's got all the talent in the world, and he's wondering how he's going to come into the tournament. This year he's going to practice more. This year he's going to play leading in. Next year he isn't. He's the last guy to register. You know, if you notice, his caddy wore number 89. That means they registered even after Akshay Bhatia, who won the previous Sunday. So, you know, you can overthink it sometimes. And I just like the way that some of these guys who are playing best, the message all these other players should get is they don't make it that complicated. So in the end, it's just golf. And it's Scotty Scheffler, it's just golf. It's a big tournament, but next week's a big tournament too. They're all big to him. And I love the way that he keeps it like that, and he's ready to go again today.
Jeff Babineau joining us here on Real Golf Radio. So you mentioned Rory. He was a big story coming in. 10 years, his opportunity to complete the career Grand Slam. The PGA Championship returns to Valhalla, the last place he won a major championship. What is your take on Rory? And, you know, Tiger says without a doubt Rory's going to get that Masters. But, you know, that's somebody that has respect for him. And what else would Tiger say at this point? But yeah. What do you expect? I mean, how small is that window starting to look at this point?
Well, I mean, I guess it gets a little smaller every year, right? I mean, he puts a lot of pressure on himself. But I've always maintained, I try to take the long game view on it. I always maintain he's going to get it somewhere. I mean, look at some of the, you know, you look at Olafable won 2 Masters, one of them after he pretty much was done with golf. Marco Mira won one at 41. Right. Maybe when the expectations are a little less for him, that's when he's going to step through the door and do it, you know. And I expect him to get right back in the major mix back in Valhalla. He's going to have good feelings there, winning in 14. You know, that was a great run he had when he won the Open Championship, and I think he won maybe at Firestone and won at Valhalla right in a row. And at the time, I remember him talking, he was hitting balls one day, getting all tangled up. And at the time, it just registered in his head, just look at your target and go. And it just simplified things. And I went on this big three tournament run. So, you know, everything's in there. It's all inside him. You just got to kind of bring it out and stop getting in his own way. And, you know, the driver will be a good weapon at Valhalla, as it is with a lot of these guys. And Rory will get back in there. He'll get his major. He'll get the Masters one of these days. But the place just, it's one of those places that can keep you at arm's length for a while. And some guys that never did give in. And so I think he will get it, but it's just never going to be easy.
What do you think ceiling is? Like you see, you were talking about Oberg and how simply makes things. What do you think his ceiling is, considering just a year ago, he was 3,000 in the world. He just graduated from college. He's won two or three times now, and he's like ninth or eighth in the world. How fast did that happen? And what do you think going forward is that going to be like for him?
I think that kid's got the world ahead of him, really. I mean, he looks awesome. He's, you know, played in the Ryder Cup before he played in the major. Just hugely impressive. His driver is such a weapon. I'm watching him at Harbortown today hit driver on all these holes and skinny corridors. And just, I think he hit eight or nine fairways. I mean, it's such a weapon. And he's got a great ceiling, but you got to kind of put a throttle on it a little bit, because you look at just last fall, this game is fleeting, right? The form is fleeting. Victor Hovland's going to be the next number one in the world. Really, I mean, he's on that trajectory, and now where is he? He's just a kid up there that's completely lost. I mean, he's messed around with a lot of things he's having success with, and he's lost right now, and he'll find it. But that golf puts you through those spells, so it's hard to, you know, you want to sit here and say Scotty Scheffler is going to win five and six green jackets, and who knows, he might, but who knows what his form's going to be in 24 months too. So it's just, golf's like that. When you're playing as well as he is and hitting the ball the way he is and on this great run, you better take advantage of it, because it sure can leave you fast.
Yeah. Hey, Babs, I know we're short on time, but I wanted to ask you about Tiger, because, you know, he gets the 24 consecutive cuts and makes it to the weekend, and then obviously not what we're used to seeing out of Tiger Woods. What's your feeling on him? And, you know, his comments afterwards were probably as honest and as I've ever heard him at all, when he talks about finishing basically last of those that made the cut and saying it was a good week and, you know, something to build on and that kind of thing. I mean, you would never hear him say that before. Where is he at right now in your mind, and what should the fans expect from Tiger going forward?
Well, I think he liked the fact that he played four rounds. I know that. But, I mean, yeah, finishing dead last at the Tiger Woods is not where you want to be. And I can't think he enjoys that. I think it's cool that he brought Charlie up there and got to share Sunday on the practice area with him. But he doesn't want to finish 60th. That's not how he's built. He's not built as a ceremonial guy. You know, Arnold could do it. Arnold could play and smile with the crowd and wave and enjoy it. I don't see Tiger doing that. I don't think Jack ever enjoyed doing that, showing up when he wasn't going to be real competitive. So I don't know how long Tiger will want to do this. Maybe he wants to keep his game fresh to give the Champions Tour a run in a couple of years and give that a little stretch, right? I mean, he can ride around the cart and really do some damage out there and really have a huge effect on that tour. So I don't know how long he wants to stay at these majors and finishing 60th. I can't imagine he'd want to do that too long.
Yeah, no question. He did say he loves it still, which is something. Hey, last thing on the ratings. What was your thoughts with the ratings being down? Do you think that's just a way that, you know, people are digesting media these days differently than just regular television? Or do you think this is some fatigue on the fans' part with all this, you know, fracturing of professional golf?
Yeah, I think it's a little of both. It's a big combination. It's almost like, you know, why do players hit it so far these days? And you want to, you know, a lot of people just point to a golf ball when they're in better physical shape, they're better physical specimens, the turf is firmer. There's all kinds of reasons that go into it beside a singular thing. And I think that's, you know, without studying it a whole lot, but just kind of the feel you have, I think it's a little bit fractured right now at the top of golf. That turns some people off. And I do think, as you say, it's how people consume this, right? I mean, I finally got with the times and cut the cord a couple of weeks ago, and I watch things differently now. People are watching on Masters.com. I don't know how you're credited with things like that. And there's 9 million channels on television and options and streaming options. So I think people, how they consume things is different. But I do think partly it's the fan that's a little tired of golf being messed up at the top. It's zooming everywhere else, and it's not great at the top right now until they figure things out. So that's the message to them, to get this thing figured out sooner than later.
Mm, yeah, I think you're right. By the way, what was your favorite sandwich this year at Augusta?
I went with an early chicken salad just for a little change of pace, but my egg salad's the go-to.
Yeah. That chicken salad's not bad, though, huh?
Chicken salad's not good.
Bad. A couple of hot dogs here and there, but the...
Really?
You know, the pimento cheese at the end of my bench, he never gets called into the game. I'm an egg salad guy, you know.
I'm with you on that.
I'm faithful.
I'm with you. So you actually did some hot... You know, I've never done a hot dog there.
Yeah, I did a couple of hot dogs. Throw a little... Got to have some relish on. Not as good as the ballpark, but you got to mix it up. I'm here for like 14 days. Got to mix it up a little.
No doubt.
Well, you're the best, man. It was so good to see you, as always. It's a pleasure to be there in that same room with you, and a nice job on good work. And we'll catch up with you again at Valhalla.
Great to see you, boys. And thanks for giving me a nice little Masters hoodie I wear around and think of you guys every time I put it on.
Oh, see, it's worth it right there. That's all we ask for. A little thought from you. Well, that's some good Babs karma coming our way, so we like
it. That's right.
Thank you for listening to the best of Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper on the Real Golf Radio Network.